This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon, getting you set up for tonight's Jets-Lightning matchup from Tampa Bay. 6 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 1290, a key game for the Winnipeg Jets as they look to get back on track, having lost three of their past four games, and for the first time since November, have fallen out of a playoff spot. Joining us on the program this afternoon from the San Jose Mercury News, David Pollock is going to join us to talk about the rift that has been exposed and ripped wide open between Joe Thornton and Sharks general manager Doug Wilson. As well, Tim Campbell from the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us, talk about the AHL's return to Winnipeg. And then Chris Dingman, Tampa Bay Lightning analyst, former Brandon Wheat King, is going to join us to talk about tonight's Jets Lightning game. We're on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Gentlemen, good afternoon. The sun come up today in your world with the Jets being out of a playoff spot for the first time since November?
Well, in my world, it did. I mean, maybe not the Jets' world.
Most people in Winnipeg, I think, even though, you know, a beautiful 14 degrees or whatever it is outside today, you know, the sun may not be shining as bright as some people would have said.
Yeah, Drew, not a good performance on Thursday against Florida. And obviously, you know, we talked about Tuesday's game on Wednesday's show. Tough loss, and you go up against a Florida team that probably one of the easier games you had on a very difficult schedule, and you weren't able to take advantage. And now you're going to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay's a heck of a team. Defensive injuries notwithstanding, they're still very difficult to beat. Extremely skilled, very fast. And they play very much, you know, a very similar game to the Detroit Red Wings. So the Jets are in tough tonight. And you see the other teams, most of them winning every night. You look at the standings right now, Jets out of the playoffs and coming back for a difficult homestand. So, yeah, it's not looking great for them for sure.
Richie, it's an uphill battle. The Jets have lost three of their last four games, and the St. Louis game, they come back, and it was only a half effort, really, because they didn't play very well for big parts of that game, but they were able to tie it up there with Blake Wheeler's shorthanded goal. But Thursday night's game against the Florida Panthers wasn't one of their best efforts, and obviously they lose Tyler Myers, and that made it hard. Jacob Trouba has to play almost 30 minutes, but we knew it was going to be tough, and the Jets knew it was going to be tough. And you got the Tampa Bay Lightning here, the best offensive team in the league, tied for first in the Eastern Conference. It's going to be tough, but this team knew that they were going to have to win some games on the road and win some games both on the home and road ice against good teams. They have a tough schedule. We went over this. It's not going to get any easier. Tyler Myers isn't playing tonight, so you're going to have Paul Postma go in, and you're going to have Peluso come out, Halichuk go in. Looks like Andre Pavlik's going to start, we're told. So this is an opportunity here. The Jets have responded well to adversity. And again, you know, I think it's kind of ironic that all of the talk over the last 3 or 4 days has been about the injuries and all of this. Were Brian Little and Dustin Byfuglien in the lineup when the Jets beat the Predators? No. So, I mean, the Winnipeg Jets can beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think everyone seems to think that that it's doom and gloom here, that the Winnipeg Jets can't go into Tampa Bay and beat the Lightning. They can beat the Lightning. It's not going to be easy, and they're a top team, and they're also competing for the Atlantic Division title and hopefully getting home ice throughout the playoffs if they can even win the President's Trophy, Drew. But come on here. I mean, there's 20 guys on this roster here that can win this hockey game. So I don't think it's completely over. There's a lot of hockey games left here, and the Jets, again, I always say it, they got to roll up their sleeves and get 2 points here.
I agree. There certainly is a lot of hockey, and it's certainly not, you know, you can't write off the rest of the season. Here's why, and you're right, Ezzy, that the Jets, for the most part, have responded well to any signs of adversity through the course of the year. Here's where I'm really concerned. They obviously had the terrible ending to the game on Tuesday in St. Louis, and you had the opportunity to bounce back on Thursday against a team you're not as good as. And I thought that, for the most part, the Florida Panthers outplayed the Winnipeg Jets on Thursday. And
you mean you're better than, not as good as, better than? They're better than Florida.
The Jets are better than Florida, yeah. But on Thursday, I thought the Florida Panthers were the better of the two teams on the ice for the majority of the game. I didn't see any desperation from the Jets on Thursday. You know, they had a they scored, obviously, the two goals that they did. But did they? I thought they made life quite easy for Dan Ellis, a goaltender who's, frankly, not that good. He's an AHL-caliber goaltender. I thought they made life quite easy for him, and that, to me, gives me a lot of pause as to I'm not sure which way this Jets team is going to go now with the 14 games that are remaining and them out of the playoffs.
Well, I mean, you heard the excuses, right? That's the one thing that would concern me most in the post-game press conference. Paul Murray's talking about having three of his top five offensive players out of the lineup. That's excuses, and you never like to hear coaches with excuses because coaches only usually throw those out when their team are struggling, is struggling mightily, or is falling out of the race. That's usually when you hear them.
The Jets are struggling mightily, though.
I know, but you don't like to throw it out. I didn't like it.
I don't like it either.
And I'll tell you, we talked Wednesday about there being an emotional reaction. Paul Maurice, emotionally kind of a little bit out of control, I thought, on the bench, different than we had seen him before. That reaction to Gary Lawless's question about the offense, which is a pretty, you know, it was a question I needed to be asked, was pretty harmless. Was I thought, again, he lost his emotion, control of his emotions. Here it is.
A little challenge with what we're going to be able to generate here, so we've got to keep our games tight.
Why are you challenged to generate? Is that you specifically?
Three of our top five offensive players out of the lineup, Gary. I mean, they pay those guys that kind of money for a reason.
So, I mean, if you hear that quote and you think to yourself, that's an excuse. Now, sure, it's a fact as well. But do you think Paul Maurice is ever talking facts all the time? I mean, the guy hardly talks facts. I mean, he's a spin master, and that's what he does. And that's okay. I mean, I don't like it personally, but I understand why he does it.
Sure.
And it's a lot of talk of very nothing.
Not a ton of substance.
This is not of nothing. This is here coming out and saying it. So again, losing his emotions a bit, because usually he'd say, well, you know, he'd come up with something that might be accurate, might not even be accurate, but nobody's going to challenge him on it. And in this case, he just comes out and says, hey, we don't have our three of our top five guys. They're getting paid big money.
If the coach is making excuses, and he hasn't made excuses all season, I think it allows the players themselves to then use that excuse to account for their performance if it's not up to snuff.
Well, he's losing composure, Drew. That's a big thing. And he's losing composure. Let's look at it the other way. Sure, Brian Little, Dustin Byfuglien, and Matthew Perreault are the lineup. And sure, those are significant injuries. I'm not going to tell you they're not. Brian Little is the number one center on the team. He's had a great year. Dustin Byfuglien's been terrific, especially on the back end. And Matthew Perreault's been very good. That being said, you lose your second-line left winger, your first-line center, and one of your defensemen on the strongest part of your team, which is your right-side back end, when you have Myers and Trouba who can still play. And I know it hurts your power play and all that, but I know Perreault hurts your power play. But you still have the rest of the squad. You went through the year with, the middle of the season, you had five or four of your top defensemen out, and you had a bunch of guy replacement-level players, and you were still performing well. The difference is you haven't been executing a defensive game plan. That's what happened. And your goaltending hasn't been as good. Now, it doesn't mean that having Little, Byfuglien, of course, more offense means less defending. I know all of that. But there's other reasons also why you're not winning. And that's why I think it's an excuse.
Right, and that goes back to...
It's fact and excuse.
Goes back to game plan and effort level. The Jets are going to have to they're going to have to win those individual battles. And I mean, it sounds cliche, Drew, but it's true. You're going up against a Tampa Bay Lightning team that has more skill than you. And Andrei Vasilevsky, even though he might be the backup goaltender, this is a 2012 first-round pick. He's a good goalie. His numbers are better than Ben Bishop's. So In fewer games, but the Jets have to go in there and they have to outwork the Tampa Bay Lightning. And they have to win a tight game. If they start to open it up, which... Paul Maurice, you can be sure that he does not want to open it up against a Tampa Bay Lightning team that will just crush you if that's what type of game plan you're going to talk about. Richie mentions, you know, the Detroit Red Wings. We saw what the Jets did in Joe Louis Arena when they went to overtime against the shootout.
Shootout. They won the shootout.
They won that game, but that wasn't the type of game that he wanted to play, winning 5-4. The point being, though, Drew, other players, Matt Halaschuk's coming back into the lineup. Other players, Yuri Talusti, Lee Stempniak, players that were acquired before the trade deadline, these are the players that are going to have to help the Jets win this game. And, you know, Blake Wheeler, Andrew Ladd, they've been doing it all year. You got to hope that those players have good games tonight because you're going to need it against the Tampa Bay Lightning team. The Jets can win this game. I find it absolutely ludicrous that people are talking about the Jets not being able to beat the Lightning when they just defeated the Nashville Predators? You can talk all you want about the Predators having a losing streak. It's within the ability of the Jets. There's a veteran group of players complemented by some good young players, Adam Lowry, Jacob Trouba, and others. They can win this game, but it's not going to be with the type of effort that they displayed against the Florida Panthers.
That's what I agree with the most of all your comments you made there, is the type of effort. And you saw that effort on Thursday night, and it just wasn't there. It wasn't a Jets team. I mean, you know you're desperate. Every game's desperate at this point. The players know the standings. They know where everything is.
The other factor, Drew, is when you play three lines all season, you're very possibly going to get tired down the stretch.
Sure.
And that's something we haven't discussed. When you play three lines and you play your fourth line 3 minutes, those other minutes are going somewhere. It's the obvious statement, but it's true. And so your big guns may be getting a little tired. I don't know if that's the case, but that's something that I think needs to be tossed out there.
Right, and when you talk about the fourth line, you can say that Chris Thorburn, Eric Odell, and Matt Halischuk isn't the scariest fourth line in the NHL, but you should be playing those guys. They're fresh. Halischuk's coming off of an injury. Odell's been waiting for this opportunity coming up from the AHL. So just saying, I mean, you know, there's an opportunity here for other players to step up. I think that's the way they're looking at this game tonight.
We will talk much more about the Jets and the Lightning throughout the course of the show. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in David Pollock from the San Jose Mercury News to talk about the latest drama between Joe Thornton and Sharks general manager Doug Wilson. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to TSN 1290's coverage of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the San Jose Mercury News, David Pollock. David, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
David, obviously brought you on to discuss the story that you broke yesterday, late afternoon in the San Jose Mercury News, the rift between Sharks general manager Doug Wilson and Joe Thornton becoming even more public than what had been maybe speculated upon since the beginning of the season. You know, how surprised were you that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, game 65, 66 in the season, this has become exposed for everybody to see?
Well, it was a little surprising, only that it had stayed below the surface for so long. And when we listened to Doug at the season ticket holders meeting, that struck me as newsworthy material. And when I approached Joe, I wasn't sure what his response was going to be, but he put both barrels on the gun there. Is this a bad connection?
No, I think we're good now.
Okay, good. Sorry.
That's okay.
David, when you consider what's happened recently with Joe Thornton and how the Sharks have played, they obviously still have a chance to make the playoffs, but do you see any way that Joe Thornton returns as a Shark next year?
You know, it's I do. I actually see it's probably a likelihood that he's going to return as a Shark next year. He has a no-movement clause in a contract that has two more seasons on it, and he has indicated from the get-go that he has no intention of leaving. It's an awkward situation, no doubt. But I don't think this is going to push Joe out the door. I think, you know, there are a lot of us who think he's just going to dig his heels in even more.
David, was this tactical by Doug Wilson? I mean, they're in the middle of a playoff race. I'll be on the outside of the playoffs right now. And, you know, he says this to 300 or so season ticket holders. But in this day and age, you know, everything's going to be leaked out or, you know, put on Twitter quickly. Do you think this was he did this on purpose, or this is just him trying to answer a question honestly and he didn't consider the ramifications when he answered the question?
I think that's probably it. Doug knew that I was in the room. It wasn't as if I was hiding in a corner somewhere, but I don't think he expected the reaction that this whole thing generated. I think he genuinely was trying to answer a question that was posed by a season ticket holder.
And, you know, continuing on that, David, because it's interesting that he does say that, and then that's obviously like him being honest, which is refreshing. Can they coexist? You said you think Joe Thornton will likely be there, and it would be kind of ironic that the guy who gives him the no-movement clause is the one who's on his way out, but do you think Doug Wilson and Joe Thornton can both be, not can, do you think they'll both be there at the beginning of next season?
Yeah, I'm not a fortune teller. I'm not going to touch that one. I think it's going to be awkward. That's all I'll say. You know, I think it's a genuine rift here. I don't think this is like a little dramatic flare up. I think this has been simmering since last summer when the whole thing started.
Do you think Joe Thornton, David, is supported? Like, do you think his teammates feel as he does? And if that's the case, is there a possibility of a significant rift between entire locker room and management?
I think, I don't know about how much of a rift there'd be with the whole room and management, but I think the team does have Joe's back on this one. Players understandably weren't going to want to be quoted saying that, you know, hey, we're on Joe's side on this. But the couple that I talked to made it pretty clear that they were supporting, you know, Joe as a teammate and as a presence in the locker room there, that he was still considered a leader, and they had his back.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is David Pollock from the San Jose Mercury News, discussing the San Jose Sharks and the rift between general manager Doug Wilson and former captain Joe Thornton. The irony of all this, David, is this is happening when the Sharks have really been playing some of their better hockey as of late, getting right back into sort of the wild card race in the Western Conference, only 3 points behind the Los Angeles Kings. A big matchup. They'll be in Winnipeg on Tuesday night to play the Jets in a key matchup of two teams battling again for that wild card spot. Why have the Sharks been playing better hockey since the All-Star break?
It's kind of, you know, it's not even just since the All-Star break. The last four or five, they won four of their last five after having a terrible, terrible February. But they're
meant trade deadline.
That's okay. Sorry, I understand. They just seem to have gotten their, you know, it's a cliche, they got their act together. They sort of, you know, they know what they are capable of, but there are some nights they go out there and they just didn't seem to be playing inspired hockey. Or they would be playing well enough and make just enough mistakes to lose. You know, there would be three giveaways and they'd lose 3-2. But they seem to have been much more focused the last several games. They've gotten back to their kind of north-south strategy that they want to play on the game, and then it's been working for them. And they've also been getting some excellent goaltending from Antti Niemi, and you couldn't have said that every game all season.
David, you mentioned Antti Niemi, and I know that it was written about in the San Jose Mercury News that some of the players approached Doug Wilson and said not to trade Niemi. And you know, a few minutes ago, you mentioned that the players you believe still have Joe Thornton's back. Does the fact that the players would have, I guess, lobbied to not have Antti Niemi traded show you that this team is a tight-knit group and they want to get into the playoffs this year?
I think they do want the challenge of that. I don't think they wanted anybody to send any signal that they were thrown in the towel and they want a chance to redeem themselves. Nobody's forgotten what happened in the playoffs last year. And of course, they'd like to be in better position now and be guaranteed to have a shot of postseason redemption. But right now, they just want to get there, and they didn't want anything that would look that they were going the other direction.
David, in terms of Coach Todd McClellan, I mean, it's a tough position, right? Because as a coach, you have to be able to communicate with your players, but also management, you have to communicate with management. How awkward a position is Todd McClellan in?
Yeah, I think he's the one who gets caught in the crossfire on this. I'm not sure. I mean, he's capable guy. He can handle it. He can deal with it. But I'm sure it's the last thing he wanted to be in the middle of going to the final, you know, 3 weeks of the season, month of the season.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News. And David, before, when I was asking you the question, I mentioned the trade deadline, and the Sharks made a number of moves at the deadline. They were sort of a little bit on the bizarre side in that you weren't quite sure what they were doing. Were they, you know, were they loading up to get better players? Were they, you know, sort of trading for the future? How did you evaluate the San Jose Sharks trade deadline moves?
They basically did exactly what Doug Wilson has been saying they were going to do, that they're still building for the future. They were trying to acquire draft picks at a time when, especially this year, the draft is a very strong one. They were looking to basically unload players that didn't fit in their future. So they got rid of, I think it was three, maybe four players who were going to be unrestricted free agents on July 1st, picked up some draft picks. Ben Smith was the exception. They got him from Chicago. And again, Doug had made it clear he was not going for any rental players. Ben Smith has another year on his contract, and I think he's a guy they want to keep around here a long time, and he's looked good in his first five games, so they may be moving in that direction.
David, this might seem like a fairly obvious question, but you heard earlier in the season that the Los Angeles Kings, amongst their management and players, were really nervous at certain points that they weren't going to get into the playoffs, and now they're obviously holding that final wild card spot, and Winnipeg, of course, and San Jose are chasing them. But how worried are the San Jose Sharks, and how desperate are they to get into the playoffs? Because I think you'd agree if they don't get into the playoffs this year, that would be considered a pretty big failure.
Yeah, it's tricky here because, you know, over last summer, Doug Wilson said sometimes you need to take a step backward to take two steps forward. He then clarified that that's not me saying this team is not a playoff team. This is still a playoff team, folks. So they have indeed taken a step backwards. They're not the 111-point team they were a year ago. But there's a lot that they have to show that they are indeed, you know, still playoff worthy. So I think they feel pretty desperate about it. The streak of 10 years without missing the playoffs is important to the organization. And I'm sure it's important to the individual players, too.
Hey, David, you look at the division. If they do sneak into the playoffs and they go through their division, the division's maybe not as scary to play some of these teams as it was a couple years ago when the Sharks were kind of at their peak. What has been the fans' perception, of the team? You know, are they taking a step back as well, saying our expectations aren't as high, or are they continuing to hope this team or expect this team to make the playoffs and be able to make a run?
Well, the fans right now are not real happy with the way the season has gone. They may have heard what Doug Wilson had to say, but they still came to the building every night expecting to win. The team has a terrible home record. I mean, if you had the regular losses and the overtime losses and the shootout losses, they've lost more games than they've won at home, and that's really uncharacteristic. San Jose's got a much better record on the road. So the fans have not been a happy group this year, and there was some of that disgruntlement that showed up the other night with the meeting with season ticket holders. They want to see this team in the playoffs. I mean, I think there are still expectations there.
David, we'll let you go on this last question. I'm not sure if you're aware, but here in Winnipeg, they've announced that the AHL team is going to be playing here next season. Just like in San Jose, their AHL team is also going to be playing in San Jose. You know, are you surprised that there's going to have two professional hockey teams in that market? Or you know, how do you think the Sharks are going to handle with their AHL team being right next door?
They're trying to, you know, I think it's really important that they got the team to California because, you know, with guys having to come from Worcester, it was really hard to get people up on an emergency basis and to get a really good assessment of what you had in the minors. I think that Wilson made a major step forward by helping make that happen. That said, the situation in San Jose, I think it's kind of an experiment. I think they're going to try to schedule doubleheaders on the weekend, so there'll be an AHL game in the afternoon and the Sharks playing at night. They're trying to come up with plans where they can have them sometimes in the middle of the week, even in an afternoon game, and get schools to bring kids in to watch hockey. I think it's a community involvement thing at one level. I also think it's kind of an experiment in the sense that there are other opportunities maybe in the Central Valley of California, Fresno comes to mind, even Sacramento, where this team might eventually be, but nothing could be worked out right away. So they're going to say, well, let's bring it to San Jose. We've got the building. We operate the building. Let's give this a run, and let's also probably be talking to people as we progress.
The San Jose Sharks are in action tonight, or pardon me, this afternoon at home to the Chicago Blackhawks, mm-hmm. a 1 o'clock start in the Pacific time zone. They'll be in Winnipeg on Tuesday night. David, appreciate your time this afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Take care, David. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
12:30 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. At Illegal Curve on Twitter. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. On that social media website and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news. IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Winnipeg Free Press, our good friend Tim Campbell. Tim, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
No trouble. Thanks for asking me, guys.
Always, Tim, we always appreciate you giving us your time. Obviously brought you on to talk about the news from earlier in the week about the AHL returning to Winnipeg, the Moose, I guess, 2.0 are going to be back here starting next season. What were your initial thoughts when you heard that the Manitoba Moose and the AHL were coming back to Winnipeg?
Well, I wasn't surprised to hear it was going to happen, but I was surprised when I found out, you know, very late last Friday night that it was going to be shortly. Because, you know, in the fall, as everyone recalls, True North had announced another extension of 1 year for St. John's, and basically it was to, you know, help the folks in St. John's that they've had such a good relationship with to you know, have some more time to try to find an alternative. So, you know, it was a bit of, you know, back scratching both ways there. I, you know, the Jets probably felt they could put up with it for another year. And, you know, so that to me had seemed to be settled. You know, what I hadn't realized was going on behind the scenes, you know, some of the other dominoes, I've been calling them dominoes for a week, but other things happened to bring this about. And, the timing of all that sort of surprised me, but, you know, once some of it was uncovered, it all made complete sense. And, you know, so in that respect, I was surprised it happened so quickly.
Tim, I know it's difficult to say right now because it was just announced, but I think everyone is expecting this to be more of a short-term situation. But with the uncertainty of an arena being built in Thunder Bay, is there a possibility that the AHL's return to Winnipeg is going to be more of a long-term or permanent situation?
Well, I think it could be. You know, my view right now is that True North has left this somewhat open-ended. There's no declaration that this is for 2 years or 3 years or until Thunder Bay gets, you know, done, if it ever gets done or even started. Nobody has said that this week, which is somewhat surprising, I guess, given that they have interest there. So the impression I'm left with is they're pretty sure there's some support for the AHL in Winnipeg and for this team. I mean, the price point is the obvious and automatic one that will draw some attention and I'm sure some interest from fans. But I get the impression that maybe the good folks at the Jets and True North don't really exactly know how this is going to turn out. They have a fair idea. They know there is some level of support here and great interest to be watching the Jets' prospects and future, you know, right under our very noses. It's a great and unusual circumstance. But, you know, I think they're just going to play their cards as they're dealt. I don't think they're getting ahead of themselves by declaring it a 2 or 3 or 4 year, you know, a stay in the city. So I'm not sure what the next move, if there is one. If there was a long-term solution for the issues that they've identified, which is geography mostly, to help get them get their players here quicker if they should need them, and you know, other development concerns like a bit less travel and a bit more practice time, if there was an easy solution to this problem, they would have pulled the trigger on it a long time ago, whether it was Winnipeg, I guess, or Fargo or somewhere else in the U.S. Midwest or Thunder Bay. You know, whatever the easy solution had been, if there was one, we'd have seen it by now. So this tells you they don't really have the final answer, and they're still looking for it.
Tim, do you think this is motivated by money at all?
Well, I guess deeply it probably is. You know, money, time equals money for people like Kevin Cheveldayoff and Craig Eisinger and I'm sure Mark Chipman. And there are a lot of times where, you know, especially Kevin Cheveldayoff, I don't think he's gone to see St. John's as much as he would have liked. And why is that? Well, because he doesn't have the time, and time is money. So, you know, the recall cost, putting a player on a plane at 5:30 in the morning and having him in Winnipeg so he could play that night, I mean, that costs a lot of money. When you do it at the last second, and do you get the best, you know, best plug-in player when he's been up so long on a given day and traveled? Probably not. And the same goes the other way. When you're sending a player back to St. John's or wherever the team may be, it takes a while, connections and time. And do you get the best, you know, player who's going down to help his team that night? Probably not. So in the end, I guess it's about money. But to me, it's more about the time and the time that's available to invest for not just the players, the management of the team, the scouts, and probably some travel time for the team itself. And St. John's, as you all know, it's not an easy thing. Although they do play most of their games against East Coast teams, they still have travel issues when they go off on the road. It's logistically a bit challenging. I'm not sure it'll be the travel end of it will be all that much more better in Winnipeg. But the other things like scouting and coaching and practicing and monitoring of the team, will be better, and that equates to time, and that equates to money, does it not?
Yeah, no, I think you put it well there. It's interesting that they're doing this. I wanted to ask another thing, Tim, in terms of the development of the players themselves, and you talk about the resources and the team can save some, they can spend more time evaluating the players. Do you think there's a negative maybe at all having the players in Winnipeg and under the microscope of the fans and media pressure all the time, whereas if they're in St. John's, you can check the box score, nobody really watches the games, and the development can kind of be a little bit more at the pace the organization wants rather than the pressure that can possibly be put upon them by the fans and the media?
Well, that might be true in a small way, but if you've ever been to St. John's, you
haven't.
Know it really, in many ways, especially in hockey, is a microcosm of Winnipeg. There are many, many comparisons here that are relevant, in my view, that, you know, when the, excuse me, in the 2011 relocation, when the AHL went back to St. John's, you know, the euphoria and the excitement in St. John's was palpable, just as it was in Winnipeg. The passion for the fans there for a pro hockey team, very, very strong. And you only have to see the response of the fans for that team when it came back to St. John's. I believe the number went to 120 straight sellouts. That is pretty impressive when you think about it. So don't underestimate the attention and the recognition around the community of St. John's for St. John's Ice Caps players. I think if you spoke to any of them or some of them when they come back or in the interim, you would find that that's a noticeable thing in St. John's. It's on a bit smaller scale there because St. John's isn't as big a community as Winnipeg, but it's no less important. And it's, you know, don't say it's only the American Hockey League, because to them that's the biggest thing in town, as the NHL is here in Winnipeg. So maybe the scale of it is somewhat reduced, but there is a tension and pressure in St. John's, in my opinion. There always has been for an American Hockey League team there. But to your point, it's possible that the scrutiny will go up substantially here in Winnipeg. I heard Kevin Cheveldayoff say this week, and I'm sure you guys did too, they see that as kind of a positive thing, a way to reveal the importance and passion of Winnipeg to the new prospects and new pros or players who haven't really been here other than a rookie or a prospect camp in the summer. So in a way it sounds like a bit of an indoctrination, but what better way to sell, you know, the assets and attractiveness of Winnipeg to players by, you know, for the long term than by putting them right in the market and letting them live it. I mean, that's to me what I heard them saying this week, that they consider that quite a positive of this move.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Tim Campbell from the Winnipeg Free Press, discussing the return of the AHL to Winnipeg. And Tim, I think it's fairly apparent that, you know, had the Thunder Bay project unfolded as everyone expected, you know,
Bay.
Yeah, I know. You know, we got Tampa Bay.
That's
tonight.
Tonight's game.
Yeah, you know, my head's spinning
it's a heck
already.
Of a project.
Yeah, you should know that those kind of mistakes are natural on this program after all your visits here. It seems to me, from my perspective, that with True North sort of, at least right now, refusing to want to go up against the WHL, be it in Saskatoon or Regina or any of the other Western Hockey League cities, probably for the right decision to not go up against them, it seems like there's almost a dearth of viable locations for this team, aside from the Thunder Bay, even though that Thunder Bay project doesn't seem like it's got any momentum behind it anymore.
Well, you're right about that momentum. I was a bit surprised to learn this week that the city council there hasn't even arrived at a plan or an approval. I thought I had been under the mistaken impression that that had hurdle had been cleared, and now it was just a matter of waiting out, the granting of some funding, some government funding. But I'm sure I read this week that the city hasn't even decided what or if it will even do it. So it's not even as far along as I thought, and I've been told that there is a deadline on the finding out about this funding to the end of the month, and that's not a real flexible deadline, especially if they are talking about a 2017 completion date for that hockey season. That would be 2 years from this fall. It'll take that much time to build the arena. It doesn't sound all that fast-tracked to me, let's put it that way. So it's really hard to tell where that's going. Maybe it'll all just fall together quickly and the Ducks will be in a row then. We'll have something else to talk about. But, you know, there are, you're right, there, it seems uncertain, and there are no obvious answers as to where to maybe plunk your team. As I said earlier, I think if the answer were obvious, they'd have done it already. I just don't, you know, the fit isn't easy, and I think you're right to point out that, you know, not a war, but a battle against the WHL franchise, or even trying to supplant the WHL franchise, probably isn't all that wise, given the history and tradition and love for the WHL and so many, you know, medium and large size communities in Western Canada. I think True North is wise to not be seen as some kind of market raider to go and try and push a junior team out. I mean, there's no better way than to foster dislike and hatred than, you know, but trying to do something like that. I don't think True North has any vision of trying to pull anything like that off. So I think you're right. I don't see that being in the cards. And you look around the Midwest U.S. places that are close and not so close, that have, some have had teams that haven't worked out. Other places may be sort of on that borderline of being the right size or not. How does it fit with the AHL's current geography? I mean, teams are a little less sparse out in this area beyond, you know, Chicago and Des Moines and Milwaukee. You know, it gets kind of thin, and the travel becomes then, you know, continues to be a headache. So closer to Winnipeg, closer to Chicago and that group of teams, what is the right place? The AHL certainly tried some of these markets. Like Quad Cities is somewhere that comes to mind. Peoria, you know, these places, and it just didn't last long there. They're not monstrous-sized communities that are would be slam dunks for support. They have their passionate pockets of hockey fans, but they're not exactly remote, but there are no direct flights between Winnipeg and Peoria and, and other places, so the difficulties increase, you know, the farther off the interstates, I guess, you go, or different interstates. It's a puzzling thing. I don't know that there is a 100% solution to this, but True North will have some time to study this in the coming 2 or 3 years, and I don't get the impression they're necessarily only married to the option of Thunder Bay.
Tim, you know, final question for you here, I guess a two-part question, and I got to ask one of them because listeners are going to kill us if we don't ask you about this, but when the announcement was made and you broke the story...
Yeah, good job on the story, by the way.
Yeah, it was a good job, and the, you know, that the AHL is returning to Winnipeg. When you consider that there's already an NHL team in Winnipeg, and I know the logistical issues that you just touched on a little bit, how do you think, and again, True North is obviously going to have to study this and make these arrangements before the season starts next year, but we had David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News, and as you know, San Jose is going to have an NHL and AHL team next year, and he mentioned that there might be some dates where the AHL game is in the afternoon and then the Jets play at night, but what do you think is the biggest challenge bringing in an AHL team in a building that already has an NHL team? And the second part of the question, and I know it's a difficult one to answer, do you think this team is going to be called the Moose?
Well, I'll answer the second part by saying my own opinion is it. I don't know why it wouldn't be the Moose. The Moose seemed to be I know it was an inherited name, but it seemed to be very popular and be a very good brand for the organization here in Winnipeg. Maybe they've got something better up their sleeves. I don't know, but all roads lead to the Moose for me. I don't know what the negatives are for Moose, to be honest with you. So. We can only wait and see. They haven't been quick to tip their hand on that, which has surprised me somewhat. As far as the building, I don't think it's much of an issue. I really don't. There are many, many NHL scenarios where teams share with the NBA in the NHL. And in fact, the Los Angeles Kings share a building with two NBA teams, do they not?
Yeah.
So, this to me is very common across hockey and the NHL that NBA teams and NHL teams find a way to share. So I don't see why an AHL team would be any more problematic than an NBA team. In fact, it would be easier, you would suggest, because you don't have to put down those cursed boards and ruin your ice every time you want to have a basketball game, and then have crappy ice when, you know, it's time for a hockey game. You won't have that problem in Winnipeg because it's two hockey teams. So I think the there's a bit of unnecessary worry about that. It's interesting. It certainly will make the arena busier, and I think you're right to point out there may be some circumstances here that will lead to double headers, you know, an afternoon game of one league and an evening game of the other. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, other than for, you know, I guess, folks with deadlines like you and I.
Tim Campbell covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. He broke the story about the AHL returning to this fine city. Tim, appreciate your time this afternoon, as always.
Happy to talk to you guys. Have a great weekend.
You too, Tim. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Tim Campbell from the Winnipeg Free Press, and prior to him, David Pollock from the San Jose Mercury News, to talk about what's going on, the drama in San Jose. No surprise really there. And of course, the AHL's return to Winnipeg. So, gentlemen, let me ask you guys this. AHL back here, do you think it's going to be a success? Do you think this is a long-term solution for True North and their quest to find a location for their AHL franchise?
Well, to answer the first part of your question, Drew, I think absolutely, without question, it's going to be a success here.
And without question, wow.
The reason for that is because the first run of the AHL in Winnipeg was an absolute success. And
can't really equate the two situations, though. There wasn't an NHL team here when the AHL was first here. I don't think you're necessarily wrong that the...
So you're saying that the AHL is going to be cannibalized by the NHL being here?
No. I think that the AHL will be a success. It depends on how you define success here, first of all. I think that they will be fine, you know, getting 3,000-4,000 people here just by the cost savings that they have associated with not having to fly to and from St. John's and not have to travel.
Hey, hold on. Okay, so the Jets play, what, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, or Sunday? That's the usual games, right?
Generally
speaking.
What's
this week? Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, depending on if Hockey Night in Canada wants them on.
Tuesday, three times a week. That's a safe.
Yeah, and there's minimum games for TSN and all that stuff. So the games that the nights that are available in the arena are Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, depending, right? So
sure.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Friday would be the big weekend night, we can assume. And the question is, like, can you draw enough people on Mondays and Wednesdays?
Well, I mean, you look back at the previous, when the Moose were here, they didn't play very many midweek games. They played very few midweek games.
Right. But you're talking here about the schedule here. We're talking.
Well, that plays to whether people will go to the games, Ezzy. Like, do you want to go to a game on a Monday? That's what I'm saying.
Well, I think the AHL is going to be a success here. I think people are going to support it. I think they supported it when it was here originally. I think Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I mean, yeah, maybe, I guess what you're getting at is on a winter night, maybe is the walk-up crowd not going to be as good? Probably not. But to answer Drew's original question, I think, first off, listen to the reaction of the AHL's announcement coming back to Winnipeg. I think everyone can agree that there is an appetite for another team here. And I think when you consider that you're going to be able to see the prospects that the Winnipeg Jets have in their system, and not only for the team, but for fans, I think that's going to be a positive. And, I mean, you're talking about a city of 700,000 people here. So, I mean, 3,000 or 4,000, you say 3,000 or 4,000. I think they can average higher than that. I mean, I don't think there's really a point in putting a hard number on this.
Well, I'm sure they have a number that they would, I'm sure that they know internally, and they won't share it, of course, that there's a number they need to average on a per game basis to make it a financially viable situation.
Right.
And financially viable doesn't necessarily mean profitable. It means that, you know, they're you know, whatever they make in Winnipeg is comparable to what they would make in St. John's, minus expenses and everything else.
What they would make elsewhere if they were to move them. What do they save on the flights there and back, as Tim was alluding to? What do they save on travel costs, not only for players, but for personnel, for scouting expenses? What does it cost to put guy up overnight? You know, all that stuff. And that's taken into account as well.
I don't think they play very few midweek games. I think they will play the weeks when the Jets are on the road. You know, when they take this weekend, if the Moose were here, I think the Moose would certainly play.
Hold on. Are we going to then schedule home games for nights that the Jets are playing road games? Are you going to have anybody going to games when the Jets are on the road on TV? On a cold night?
No, I mean, fair point. No, but I think they can schedule around. If the Jets play...
So then, hold on. Okay. Then you're going to have 162 nights a year, 164 nights a year that somebody's going to sit down and watch hockey or go to games.
I think that...
I guess in half, because you're not going to watch the AHL games, aren't going to be on TV. So you can take 41 off of that.
Sure. I think
that's a lot of nights, Drew.
I agree. It's a big commitment, but that's why I think that they don't need a... I don't think they need as big of a number as they needed when they were when there wasn't an NHL team here. That's I think fair. They can get 3,500, 4,000 people probably on average sure. to most games. I think that's a fair number for them to strive towards. And I'm sure they won't want to schedule their AHL team to play again, to play at home when the Jets are on the road, say tonight. So what would they do? They'd look, okay, well, the Jets, the NHL schedule comes out ahead of the AHL schedule. So they'll say, okay, well, the Jets are playing Thursday, Saturday this week.
That's pretty particular, though.
What's that?
It's pretty particular.
Well, I know it's pretty particular, but they'll work around it the best they can for the most part. And I think they'll say, okay, well, the Jets play Thursday night and they play Saturday night, so we'll play Friday night at home and then we'll play a Sunday afternoon game. I mean, there's a lot of families that now will have an opportunity to go to hockey games.
I'm not saying that's not the case, but I'm saying, like, if it's case, so it's this week, Ezzy, okay? We're in March right now. They play Jets play Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday at home.
Next week you're talking about. This coming week.
And if you dropped a Moose game, call the Moose on a Wednesday night.
The Moose rarely play Wednesday night games.
They get to play sometime.
The AHL plays the predominance of their games between Thursday nights and Sunday nights.
Okay, well, you know who makes a lot of money on those nights? The people who own the buildings downtown, which the Jets own some of those buildings, and the Jets, when they get everybody downtown on a big night. Like, so you think they want to give up, the Jets are going to give up those big nights to the AHL?
No, but I think they'll move those, I think they'll play on the road. I mean, with the
well, I'm just saying, are you going to go to, like, is there going to get a big crowd for a game? Do they even need it is the question, because they can make enough money elsewhere. And they're, I mean, is the AHL team making money is a factor? It's just, I think it's more of not losing money.
Right, I agree that it's not losing money. I think that they...
But on a Wednesday night, are you going to, after watching a game, a road game, going to a game with your family or watching that game, is your wife or kids are going to be okay with going to the Wednesday game to watch the AHL?
Well, Remus just looked this up. The Milwaukee Admirals,
yeah.
They played in the month of February. Yeah. Kudos to Remus for looking this up. They played two games at home on a non-Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So for the entire month of February, the Admirals played two games at home that weren't on what's called a weekend night. In January, the same schedule.
I forget Milwaukee's NHL team though.
Well, they don't have an NHL team, obviously, but they have a NBA team.
Yeah,
I know it's different. I know what your point is. I don't think
they
it's going
to have two NBA teams.
I know. I don't think
they're
it's
an NBA and NBDL team.
Yeah, I don't think it's going.
I'm not saying it's not going to work. I'm just saying I think that people need to take a step back here. I don't think this was option number one.
Right, but I think we're missing the big point as far as the scheduling and how many fans they're going to need to turn a profit. I'm looking at it from the fans' point of view that now it's a more affordable product for families to have, and it's an alternative to the NHL, and I think that's positive. This is, to me, there's nothing negative about this. It's all positive. The return of the AHL, it gives another alternative for families to have affordable hockey to watch.
I agree wholeheartedly with that comment.
I don't disagree. I'm just saying I don't know if it's a shoe-in success as everybody thinks it is, because I think it's a lot of hockey in a market with not that many people. And I love hockey. I'm not going to say as much. More than the next person. But it's just a lot of hockey.
See, I would say that there's a wait list of people that want season tickets.
To the NHL.
I don't think they want season tickets necessarily to the... They keep talking about...
people who bought tickets to the Moose.
The point being that they're hockey fans. There's a lot of hockey fans in Winnipeg.
Yeah, but if you've made a commitment on the waiting list for hockey of an NHL level, I'm not sure...
I'm not saying... I am saying that there are enough hockey fans... Whether it's 3,500 or 4,000 fans, if that's the number that you're fixated on, I think they'll get that.
Oh, it's not a number I'm fixated on. I have no skin in this game. I don't give a damn one way or the other.
No,
this
you is said what True North you said 3,500.
Yeah, because I think that's what True North says they need. I have no skin
in
this game whatsoever.
I'm saying I didn't say you did.
Well, you said the number I'm fixated on.
Well, you mentioned it.
Well, yeah, because I think that's what True North is trying.
Right,
True
but they
North
didn't
is,
mention it.
True North is sitting there.
They never mentioned that number.
I like this. This is good.
They didn't mention that number, but
well,
you have
so
to know that there's a number. There's a number that they need.
Okay, so whether they came up with it, and I'm not saying that you have any skin in the game. I'm saying that I think the AHL will be a success. It was a success when it was here originally. It was considered an NHL-run-like franchise when it was here, and I think there are enough hockey fans in a city of 730,000 people to support it.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290.
Hold on, I have my referee jersey on. I've put you both in your separate corners.
Hey, no, that's a good, healthy debate.
It's healthy debate.
If anybody's listened to the
show. Well, you guys were both pounding sour soothers during the debate, so it wasn't healthy, but it was a debate.
I haven't had one sour soother yet. You know what? You're the guy who's had the most sour soothers of anyone in this room.
I have you in the most. You know?
Richie's got a sweet tooth.
He does have a sweet tooth. Yeah. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
I'm heading to Bernstein's post-show.
Okay, yeah. That's good. It's gonna
better.
I got a craving.
Better not fill up on too many sour soothers, Richie, or you're not going to be able to have that corned beef sandwich.
Remus, you seemed interested there.
I may be.
All right, we can chat.
I'm in.
You guys are going to sit at opposite tables. Is that what's going to happen?
Take the tape off of his mouth, and we can chat later.
Fair enough.
Go for a good omelet.
Let's talk about the Jets and the Lightning tonight from Tampa Bay. Games time 6 p.m. here on this fine station.
Drew, I was asking you this before we met. Met before the show. When you claim that the arena has been called the Amalie Arena for the last 2 years, I don't even remember that. I just always remember it as the Tampa Bay Times Forum.
I believe it's the last 2 years it's been called I believe it's the Amalie. I'm not sure if it's Amalie or Amalie, but Amalie Benjamin, who covers the Bruins.
After her?
It's not named after her, but I think she wrote an article last season about Amalie Benjamin going to the Amalie Oil Arena.
Okay.
If I recall correctly. Let's talk about the Jets Lions for tonight, because they've yet again gone into the blender, and Paul Maurice has come up with the following forward lines. Andrew Ladd, Adam Lowry, Michael Frolik, left, center, right.
Yeah, I like you got the centers. You need to have, you guys were talking about Lowry on Wednesday.
We're getting a little emotional.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you need to have, I think, Frolik in the middle, or other guys, wingers in the middle. It is a tough task, especially this time of the year. If you have guys who are not maybe the most talented offensive guys, and Adam Lowry's done a lot of good things, but he's not the most talented offensive player, he still is a center, and he's a big body. And I think you want to be able to, you know, play centers at center this year, this time of year, put it that way.
Here's a guy who's playing off of his position. Blake Wheeler going to play left wing with Mark Scheifele centering and Drew Stafford on the right side.
Yeah, and you know what, Drew? They like Wheeler, who sweeps down. Well, teams have kind of sniffed this out, but he really did like to kind of wind down from right boards through the left boards on the power play breakout, and then beat the defenseman wide and beat the right side forward on the penalty kill of the other team in the neutral zone. But at the end of the day, that is a play that they probably are, one of the reasons they are putting him there is because of his ability to create speed through the neutral zone and protect the puck down the boards there. But it's not ideal. He is more comfortable, especially 5-on-5 in his natural right wing spot. But they don't, you know, they don't really have a choice.
Yeah. The third line, Jiří Tolusti on the left side, Jim Slater in the middle, Lee Stempniak on the right side.
So at the end of the day, it's going to be Stempniak or Wheeler that's playing the other side, because they have too many right wingers and not enough left wingers.
That's right. And then your fourth line, Chris Thorburn on the left side, Eric O'Dell.
He's not a left winger either. So
that's right. Yeah. A glut of right wingers an absence of left wingers. Eric O'Dell up the middle, and Matt Halaschuk makes his return to the Jets lineup after being out for a significant period of time with injury.
Well, if you think about it, Evander Kane's traded, natural left winger.
Yep.
Matthew Perreault. Absolutely. He's a center, but he can play left wing.
Sure.
You don't have Matthew Perreault there. So, I mean, I actually like the lines here, I think, based on the decision to take Anthony Peluso out. But, you know, good for Matt Halaschuk. He hasn't played a game since late January. And it's good. You get a guy who's obviously an energy player. But, you know, the Jets, you talked about just going back to the third line there with Jim Slater, Tolusti, and Stempniak. They played together against Florida, and I thought they had a very difficult time generating offense. They had a few chances, but the Jets as a whole didn't have very many chances. They only had 20 shots on net.
Yeah.
So you got to have those natural centers. And I actually thought that Adam Lowry against St. Louis was very good with Andrew Ladd and Michael Frolik. So if you think about it, guys, that's the line. Yeah. You got Michael Frolik, who was on a 7-game point streak, and Andrew Ladd, who's obviously, you know, leading the team in points. That's the line that's going to have to generate offense. In addition to the Scheifele-Wheeler-Stafford line, that's also been good, but it's really because those other two lines are an unknown, Rich. You got Halaschuk coming in, he's fresh, and you hope that he's able to bang some bodies and maybe get a goal in front of the net or something like that. Those top two lines for me are the key. They have to generate some offense. You're going to need some goals. The Tampa Bay Lightning are going to score their goals. They're the best offensive team in the league. So to me, and you got to give props to Mark Scheifele. I mean, he's been about a point per game for the last eight or so games, and he's been playing well. He scored a really nice wrist shot goal against the Florida Panthers. So they got to keep that going, because even though the Tampa Bay Lightning, they might be the scary juggernaut in the East, you could expose them. And you know, Matt Carl's coming back. They're not as tight knit of a defensive group, for example, as
they're fast,
the St. Louis Blues or the LA Kings. They are fast.
They're fast and they're very skilled. Yep. And I you know, I like the idea of taking Peluso out, because you have to match your team to the game that the other team's playing as well. Yeah. I have concerns about how the defenses of the pairings and the depth lines here are going to be able to keep up with this Tampa Bay team. There's just so much skill here. You look at their second and third lines, guys. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be a tough task. There has to be the Jets is going to have to be one of those games where the Jets are going to get outshot. They have to make sure those shots are from the outside, and they try and squeak out like a 2-1 game here and take advantage on the power play. That's the kind of game this will be. If you open it up at all, you're done.
Let's talk about the Jets' defensive pairings, because this is really where you're getting into some trouble. Obviously, Tyler Myers not in the lineup tonight. He's going to be reevaluated back in Winnipeg when they return after tonight's game. We'll see if he's able to play on Tuesday against the Sharks or not. Enstrom and Trouba, they're your clear-cut number one defensive pairing. Mark Stewart plays the left side alongside the returning Paul Postma, who's been a healthy scratch for about the past 6 months or so.
And the problem you have, Drew, before you even get to say the third pairing first.
And then the third pairing is the Jay Harrison-Adam Party pairing that's been playing together for the last number of games.
Problem you have is that you have to play Mark Stewart and Paul Postma against, and you don't even have last change, against Tyler Johnson's line. I mean, how are you going to fare there? That's a very tough matchup. That is, you have to defend as a five-man unit, because on a matchup basis, you're going to get cooked tonight.
Yeah, and you got Nikita Kucherov, and looks like Nemesnikov is another young player there that's going to be on the second line, because it looks like they're going to put Drouin with Brian Boyle there at center. It's going to be a very tough... There's a couple of mismatches there when you talk about Jacob Trouba. I'm not saying that's a mismatch, but when you consider that he's going to have to play more minutes now, which he's done before.
He might play. He could play 30 minutes this game.
He'll play
30 minutes.
That's fine. It's better, to be perfectly honest with you. If I'm the coach, I'd rather have Jacob Trouba play 30 minutes a little bit tired than some of the other guys play more minutes.
Richie, he can handle it. I mean, Jacob Trouba is the best defenseman on this team. We've talked about this, and you know, he might have struggled a little bit here down the stretch, but... You know, he'll be paired up with Tobias Enstrom and Mark Stewart and Paul Postma. I mean, Paul Postma, again, there's a lot of pressure on him, but you know, he's gotta live up to it. And he's coming in, he hasn't played, he's been a healthy scratch for most of January, February, and March.
Confidence is an issue with Postma, is he? And it's certainly not gonna be great confidence when you get thrown into the lineup out of desperation. You haven't played him forever. I think there's a
January 8th is last game Paul Postma played.
I mean, there's a benefit to Postma in the sense that Tampa Bay does play a speed game. They're not the most physical team, and his game is a speed game, you know, and a puck moving game. So I don't think, see, it's yes and no, because I think the physical game sometimes throws him off. He's not the most physical. The problem you have on the other, conversely, is that speed on Paul Postma makes him make quick decisions, and he's not great at that. Like, he holds on to the puck sometimes a second too long. And Tampa gets on you quickly, so there's a little bit of concern for me there as well.
Worth noting that Tampa is without a couple of regulars. Andre Palat out for the next little while. He's injured along with Cedric Paquette. Mm-hmm. And Palat's got 52 points, and Paquette's got 19 points. And like you mentioned also, Braden Coburn out of the lineup as well.
So Nemesnikov plays, and then they have Drouin going out. Drouin's on the third with Fopula. This is a luxury here. This team is so...
Their fourth line is nothing to write home about, so I mean... Not that the Jets' fourth line is anything to write home about either, but you're right. The top nine that Tampa's going to throw out there is better than the Jets' top nine, and it's also better than the Jets' defense.
You have to stay out of the box. These are obvious statements, but this is in this game kind of game. Out of the box, don't take any chances. Try and win 2-1. That's the game you're going to have to play. If you try and open it up and send your defenseman in,
and he gets caught up ice.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
You're toast.
And the starting goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets tonight, for the first time that he's going to start a game in 3 weeks, is Andre Pavlik.
Do we have Maurice's comments? Do you have Maurice's comments? Because Dennis Bayak, I think it was on, do you listen on Wednesday's show? That was in the audio.
That was Wednesday's show.
Dennis Bayak asked him, if, you know, what happened in Florida, what happened in St. Louis would affect his goaltending decision in Florida. And he said, well, I already have my guy chosen and all that stuff. And then today he came out, and if Remus has the audio, basically says the opposite. So if we have that, I mean, I just find it's interesting that he admits to changing his mind. I thought it was kind of a weird way that he did it, because he would have thought he might want to do it the other way. Remus?
I had him going in one of the two Florida games here this week, just based on the schedule that we're going to be coming into. Probably was in Florida. With the way the game ended in St. Louis, I didn't think putting him right back in made a whole lot of sense. But the numbers aside, the important numbers is going into St. Louis. Mike was, 6-1-3, so he's there. But he has needed some time off at times and flourished when we've done that. And Pav needs to get back in there and play the game he's capable of playing.
Far be it for me to criticize Paul Maurice for the decisions he makes, but you're throwing Andre Pavlik, who hasn't played in 3 weeks, right to the wolves, I think, putting him, a goalie who doesn't have a ton of confidence. You appear to not have a ton of confidence in him, and you're throwing him a bit to the wolves, I think, playing him against a Tampa Bay team that's locked and loaded in front of him behind a defense is not as good.
It's a tough matchup for sure. You have to wonder also if this is kind of, throwing to the wolves in the sense, Drew, but to save also Michael Hutchinson's confidence, that's, I think, probably a bit wavering right now. And you give him a little break, he comes and he plays Tuesday in a huge game. Like, if Michael Hutchinson plays in this game, guys, and gets shelled.
Sure.
Then you come into the biggest game of the season on Tuesday with a team right behind you, you're really worried. So you might be onto something there. Drew, you have more here, Remus? So the old comment from Wednesday?
Yeah, this is from Wednesday.
Okay.
Like with the other team? Hope not. Yeah, I've got my guy picked. I'll tell you tomorrow.
Okay. On that topic, and I'm not asking who's your starting goalie.
Yeah.
Did the events of last night make it more difficult to make that decision? Because you could argue that both guys kind of for various reasons.
Yeah. I don't know. So if you have the other scenarios go and we win that game, is that more of a difficult decision? I don't feel it's a particularly difficult one right now. I'm pretty clear on who's starting.
See, Drew, I like the decision to start Pavlik here, and I'll tell you why. And I said this on the midweek show, and I said, I think a lot of people, when everybody was really getting on Andre Pavlik for that goal, and it was a bad goal, but I said put him back in for the Thursday game, and he obviously didn't. But I know what you guys are saying. You could argue that this is a little bit of throwing him to the wolves against a very good Tampa Bay team. But I like it because he hasn't played a lot. This is his first start in, is it 9 games for Andre Pavlik? I think Hutchinson started 8 in a row, if I'm mistaken. If I'm not mistaken, I should say. So I think it's nice for him to get a start and prove himself again. And I really don't have any concerns. I know maybe some people out there are saying, oh, no, Andre Pavlik's in net tonight. He's going to let in 6 goals. And that very well may happen with this Tampa Bay Lightning team when you have Steven Stamkos and Tyler Johnson and all these talented players. But this is a veteran goalie at this point in his career, Richie. He's been in a lot of games. So I think for him to come in, even though he hasn't started a lot in the last 3 weeks, I think he knows that he can do this. I mean, think back to the January game against Dallas when Andre Pavlik went in there. I think it was 2-1, and he stole that game against Dallas.
Sure.
In Dallas. So, and again, this is going to be a tough game. It'll be a tough game, but I think Andre Pavlik, has a lot to prove. And again, you got to think, for Andre Pavlik, he still wants to prove that he's the number one goalie.
Well, he certainly has an opportunity if he plays well tonight, and the Jets certainly need him to be at his absolute best to have a chance.
If he plays
in this game
well tonight and they beat Tampa Bay,
he probably starts Tuesday, I would think.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be interesting. It'll be seeing what the outcry would be like if he gets that going. We'll find out with Puck Drop at 6 p.m. tonight, live from Tampa Bay. Ezzy, before we go to break, I have to apologize to you and give credit to the Soch on Twitter, who's down in Tampa Bay for tonight's game. The Tampa Bay Times Forum was renamed the Amalie Arena in September of 2014. So you were correct. It is the first year.
Well, that's fine. And I should mention, too, while we're previewing tonight's Jets Lightning game, you guys know I didn't shave my beard off, and some people were asking me about that on Twitter because I did say, maybe Remus can pull up the clip. We don't need the clip. I said that if the Jets don't win, I would shave my beard off. I didn't. So you've allowed me, right,
sure,
to extend whatever. The bet.
Hold on. Let's get a little more into this. I said to you after the game on Thursday night, looks like you're shaving your beard. And then you messaged me yesterday saying, we're going to do double or nothing. If the Jets lose on Saturday, I'm shaving my beard. And then I said, but that's not double or nothing. You're already shaving your beard. So maybe if you shave your back and your beard, that's double or nothing.
How about this? I'll shave the beard. I think the Jets are going to win tonight. I know a lot of people are scared about this game. I'm going to predict that the Jets win. And if they don't win, not only will I shave my beard right off, because this is 3 months of beard here.
It's big.
I'll shave the beard off, and I'll take you out for a lunch at Bernstein's Deli.
Oh,
done. Sold. And if the Jets win, I'll buy you lunch. That's double or nothing. Because right now, I had absolutely no interest in this bet at all.
It's a double cheeseburger or nothing.
Anyways, good deal. Let's head to break. When we come back, Chris Dingman, Tampa Bay Lightning analyst, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past 1 o'clock, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, comedian Mike Lawrence is in town. It's his final night in town, so be sure to check him out. And of course, in case you missed the announcement earlier this week, from Saturday Night Live, coming in May from the 14th to the 16th, comedian Jim Brewer. Tickets now on sale at rumorscomedyclub.com. Get them before they go, because they will go quickly. We are now joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst Chris Dingman. Well, obviously brought you on to talk about the Lightning and the Jets tonight in Tampa Bay. The Lightning sitting tied with the Montreal Canadiens right now for first in the Atlantic Division. They technically sit second because of games played. Are the Lightning right now just sort of, you know, trying to stay healthy, making sure everything's all systems go, leading into the playoffs in about a month's time?
I think a little bit of that, and just trying to fine-tune and polish their game and stay healthy. They lost couple big name players a couple games back, and you know, they were able to play pretty good. I thought in Boston they had a bit of a sluggish start in the first period, and if you look at how they've done historically in Boston, it hasn't been too good, but they found a way to battle back and get a point, which I think was pretty good. That was coming off of one of their best performances, I would say, of the year in Montreal, where that was probably the best 60 minutes they played as a team for an entire game. They just completely dominated the Montreal Canadiens and just played a solid game all around, and that's kind of what they need to do going down the stretch around here and into the playoffs, is that, you know, as high scoring as they are, as much talent that they have, that, you know, there's times within a game where they kind of fall asleep, so to speak, or, you know, those ill-advised turnovers or some big momentum shifts. But, you know, they find ways to score goals and get back into games if they're down. And, you know, sometimes when you have that much talent, you know, you can get yourself back into it where, you know, you need to have that mentality a little bit where, you know, they gotta play good from the start and play a solid game. And, you know, I thought they really did that in Montreal, and, you know, they did a little bit of that in Boston, but it was still a good game, and they had a chance in overtime to score on the power play. But Steven Stamkos and his broken stick hurt things a little bit, but, you know, those sticks, they always seem to break at the most inopportune time. So, but I think they've been playing some pretty good hockey lately.
Chris, you know, we were talking right before we have you on here about, you know, looking at the wild card standings, and right now the Habs, I guess, have a game in hand, and Tampa does have the regulation overtime tiebreaker, but we are less than a month away from the season ending, and you are looking at matchups now. You follow the team, you know, of course, on a day-to-day basis. Is there one team that they might play that the Bolts might want to avoid, or they don't match up with as well as maybe some other teams?
Boston.
Yeah.
unless something really, really drastic happens, then I have all my advantage. But just historically, going into Boston, they haven't done very well there for whatever reason. And, you know, it's just one of those buildings. But, you know, the Lightning this year have seemed to have turned the tide, so to speak, on some of the buildings. They went into San Jose, a place where they haven't won a lot. And played a really good game there. They went to Anaheim and played a really good team there, played good on the road. So, you know, Boston's a team that, you know, if the Lightning can figure out a way to win there, I think, you know, things would be okay. But that's one team that really seems to give them problems. And, you know, it just doesn't seem like there'd be an easy matchup no matter who you play. You know, just the parity in the league and the quality teams that, you know, we've seen last couple of years with the LA Kings of the world and teams like that, that it doesn't matter if you're the first seed, seventh or eighth seed, you just got to get in. And, you know, if you play well and you have good goaltending, anybody can win. So I think Boston is just one team that, you know, they struggle a little bit during the season, but they're, you know, they got good coaching, Zdeno Chara, they got good goaltending, and they're hard to play against. So in a seven-game series, not that any of those other teams aren't tough to play against, but in a seven-game series, they're a team that I think physically can wear you down a little bit. And as I mentioned, the Garden's a tough place to play in.
Chris, how important has it been for the Tampa Bay Lightning's success to have so many players that are drafted by the Lightning? Everyone obviously knows Stamkos and Hedman are high draft picks of the Lightning, but when you talk about Andre Palat and Nikita Kucherov and Alex Killorn and Jonathan Drouin, and you can go on and on, how important has that been for the continued success of the Lightning?
Well, I think it's been very important, and you know, I think Steve Yzerman, what he's done is, you know, I don't know if you want to say mimic, but you know, really kind of try to do things the way they do in Detroit. And you look at a team like that that doesn't have very many first-round picks, and if they do, they're going to be, you know, towards the bottom half of the first round. So you got to find players in the second and third and fourth and fifth rounds that they've been able to do over the years. And, you know, I think something Yzerman wanted to do is really replenish the minor league system, so to speak, and have good quality players down there. And, you know, these guys that are having success up here now, I think a big part of that is that, you know, a lot of these guys were coached under John Cooper. They had success at the American League level. They went to a couple championships, winning one, the one there where they, I think they won 25, 27 games in a row. So, you know, I think drafting these players and having them play in the minors under the, you know, same system and the same team and sort of coming up together and, you know, that triplet line, as we like to call it, the Johnson and Palat and Kucherov. Well, Johnson and Palat have played with each other for a couple years now, so that chemistry is already there. And so I think it's been very important in drafting these guys and bringing them up and not rushing them. And I think you see that with some teams where you bring 18 and 19 year olds into the league. Some guys are ready to do it. You know, some guys aren't. And I think you give them a year or two, maybe three in the minors and really develop their game. And you know, I think those two guys, especially the Johnson and Plott, that, you know, they play such a good, well-rounded game where they're scoring goals and they're doing all that, but they're so responsible defensively and they're not an equal opportunity, so to speak, where, you know, they produce points, but they're, you know, you look at their plus minuses, and I think it's pretty staggering how well they've done on both sides of the puck. So I think just having that chemistry and growing up together and, you know, spending that time, as much as it's not a lot of fun to ride the bus to some of those arenas, I think it's really paid off for a lot of these players.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst Chris Dingman. He's getting you set up for tonight's Jets Lightning game in Tampa Bay.
Chris, I know he's injured now, that being Braden Coburn, but I guess first part of the question is, were you surprised to see the Lightning go out and make a move like that in acquiring Coburn? And then the second part would be, before he got hurt, how was he playing?
I don't think I was too surprised. I think everyone kind of, you look around the league and, you know, obviously everyone has the experts and, you know, what's a position of need. And I think the biggest surprise is maybe trading away Radko Gudas, who was kind of a fan favorite, a physical guy, a big hitter. But he's had some injuries, you know, the last couple of years, couldn't seem to stay healthy of playing that physical brand. And, you know, I think there's a need on the back end for a veteran guy. And everybody has a wish list and seems to be going towards the deadline. Everybody wants a top four defenseman or a top six forward. And, you know, I think, you know, Steve Yzerman isn't willing to mortgage the future, so to speak, for the present. And, you know, I think the way he worked those couple of trades, I think, you know, trading Brett Connolly, getting those couple second round picks back kind of made up for, you know, giving away that first round pick. So a bit of a surprise maybe, but not too surprising, because I just think the way they've done things and worked things, and they get so much good young talent, and you know, even the goaltending position, the Vasilevskis of the world, and you know, they got some good players at every position, that it made a little easier to make some of those trades and make that trade especially. So I think that was a, you know, very good trade for, you know, a pretty good price. And then how was he playing? He was playing great. You know, his first game, got a big hit, got in a fight, which always you know, gets the fans liking you. But he was a good fit. He fit in right away with his team. And you know, he's a big guy that can skate, is physical, can make a good pass. You know, obviously not very offensively minded, but with a team like the Lightning that has all these guys that can score goals, and everyone talks about how many goals they score and the talent, the speed. It was good to get a guy like that that's kind of a steady Eddie, as they like to say, and, you know, stay-at-home guy. And, you know, I thought he was playing really well. It's just a shame that he got injured.
Chris, you mentioned Andrei Vasilevskiy, and it looks like he's going to get the start tonight. And I know he's, well, speaking of first-round picks, he was a 2012 first-rounder. I know he's really highly thought of in the Lightning organization. He's gone into about 10 games so far. I haven't had a chance to see him play that much, but what have your impressions been of Vasilevskiy so far?
He's been great. You know, a lot of his starts are on back-to-back situations where the team's tired and, you know, thing, your legs just aren't there as much, but you know, most of his starts have been on the road, and he's had a 45 save performance, and he's gone into some tough buildings. And I think he's been better than advertised. And you know, at his age, and they've done some things where they'll call him, you know, they've had him up here, and then they've sent him back down. And then, you know, even since you know, he kind of took over that backup position, they've sent him down here and there to get him some games. And you know, after he struggled in a couple of them, and you know, he continues to get better and better, and it's exciting to see. You know how good he is already, but how good he can be, and the potential that's there. And you know, he gives his team an opportunity to win. And I think it was they're playing in Nashville. I think it was a Nashville game. He made one of the best saves I've seen in a long time, and one of those highlight reel saves. And you know, you like your young goaltender see that, and guys have confidence in him too, which is, you know, obviously a big thing. And you know, you're starting goaltender, and they've shown with Ben Bishop back there, the team. Yeah, you kind of have that mentality that you can make a mistake because you know he's going to bail you out. And it seems to be they have that mentality too, that you know, it doesn't matter if Bishop's in there or Vasilevskiy, they still got to play the same way, and they don't play tentative. And like I said, he's been really good so far.
Our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst Chris Dingman, getting you set up for tonight's Jets Lightning game taking place in Tampa. Start time 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290.
Chris, you mentioned Brett Connolly before, getting, you know, 2 seconds for him, and on the same day they made the move for Braden Coburn. Why didn't it work out for Connolly in Tampa Bay when he was, you know, so highly regarded, coming drafted in the top 10 a couple years back?
Well, I don't know if it didn't work out, but if you remember back, I think his draft year, he only played about 16 games due to injury, and and then there wasn't a situation they liked his junior team, so they ended up keeping him up here as a 19-year-old. Didn't play a lot of minutes, which I think really, you know, if having that injury in his draft year and then you know, not playing a lot of minutes his first year, you know, they thought it was best to have him go and play in the American Hockey League, and obviously it's pretty tough after you play here in the NHL. And you know, he really worked on his game and his all-around game and getting stronger, and after missing that time. And, you know, I thought before he got traded, he was playing some of the best hockey he's played, or if not the best hockey. He was, you know, everyone knows he can score goals. He's gifted offensively. But he played with a little bit of grit to his game and, you know, got in the odd scrap here and there. And, you know, I think he'd really, I don't know if the turn in the corner is the word, but, you know, really stepped his game up. And, you know, just he was... you know, just you look at the abundance of talent and the depth on this team, I think that made it easy, I guess, so to speak. And so I don't know if it's so much about not working out, but it's just there were so many other guys, there's so many good young players on this team that I guess made it easier. And you talk to people or you hear the reaction of after trading them and getting a couple second-round picks for them, people were, you know, couldn't believe that they got that for them. So, you know, I think it was a combination of, you know, there's so much talent at the forward position and being able to get that kind of return for him, knowing that, you know, they made that other move and gave up a first-round pick. So I think a couple of those things didn't make it easy, but, you know, made it easier.
Sorry to interrupt there, Chris. You look at tonight's game, and Tampa Bay, obviously, they come out with a ton of skill and a ton of speed. The Jets have a bunch of injuries on the back end right now. And how do the teams, you know, the Lightning have been playing a lot more often, but, you know, applying to the Jets tonight, how does a team defend against the Lightning's speed, especially in transition?
Very good question. I think, you know, teams that have success against them are the teams that play the body and don't take penalties. You know, the Lightning, a big part of their game is that puck possession game where they want to hang on to the puck and not just chip it out and get rid of it. So I think that's a big part of it. But, you know, teams that have had success against the Lightning, and you know, you look at the Bruins a little bit, teams that are physical and make them play in their own end and try and create turnovers. And, you know, the Lightning are guilty at times of trying to make that extra play and turn the puck over. And if teams are able to create some turnovers and make them play some extended periods or extended minutes in their own end, you know, that's where you can have some success. So, you know, I think if you're able to do that, you can limit those chances. But, you know, Lightning, they're a scary team, and the fact that they can be down and out, and then for you, they can score two or three very quickly, you know, especially in the third period where they seem to get better and better. But I think getting a lead is the utmost importance for teams when playing against them, and just try and make them play in their own end. And, you know, that old adage that your best defense is your offense, and it's pretty tough to score if you're playing defense in your own end. So, you know, I think the teams that make them play down low in their own end and cycle the puck have some success.
Chris, wanted to ask you about Jonathan Drouin. This is, of course, his rookie season, and he's only got a couple of goals, but how would you say that he's adjusted coming over from the QMJHL in his first year?
I think he's been pretty good, to be perfectly honest with you. And, you know, he's another guy that's had some injuries and, you know, missed training camp and missed some games. And, you know, but I think he's been really good. He's got a ton of talent. I think we all know that and we recognize that and you see it. And, you know, but I think they're kind of bringing him along slowly, so to speak. And he's had some really good games. And the Western Swing, he had a really good game in Calgary, you know, a few months back. And, you know, he continues to get better and better. And you can see there's certain flashes of his game, and he's got that skill and that elusiveness and stuff that I think everybody saw in junior. And, you know, doing it in the NHL against bigger, stronger guys is a little different, but, you know, you see flashes of that. So I think he's been really good. It's just a matter of, you know, I think from the coaching staff and for him, it's just a little more consistently being able to do that. But, you know, I think he's been good. He's got the talent, and I think he's going to be a great player for a lot of years. Or just, I think you just bring them along slowly, kind of like what they did to Steven Stamkos a little bit, where they had a plan there to sit him out here and there for a couple games. And, you know, I remember going back to Stamkos' rookie season, they sat him out for the one game, and he played so well, he kind of had that attitude that you're not going to take me out again. So, you know, I think he's done well, but, you know, he's another guy, too, where, you know, you look at the depth at the forward position for this team, and, you know, any other team, he'd be a top six forward. But, you know, with those top two lines, it's pretty solidified, and third and fourth line is pretty strong. You know, makes it hard for him some nights to get some ice time.
Chris, we'll let you go on this last question. I'm not sure how much attention you pay nowadays to your old WHL club, the Brandon Wheat Kings. But
Division title, right?
Division title. Not only that, last night they got their 50th win of the year, meaning with four games to go in their season, they have a chance to exceed the franchise record for wins in a season, beating the 95-96 Wheat Kings, of which, of course, you were a member of. What do you remember most from that 95-96 season for the Brandon Wheat Kings?
Oh, what do I remember? Long bus rides, getting off the bus with my equipment frozen solid. That thing burned oil, but it was a ton of fun. It was dusty. I remember having my nice little bunk with a foam roller in there that wasn't very comfortable, but yeah, you know, just great years there. Obviously, Kelly McCrimmon's done a great job since when I was there, and I just remember my first year there. You know, that was when I think we set the point record, I believe it was, for the biggest turnaround in points from one year to the next, and I think it's been broken since. But
from 28 points to 90 points.
Yeah, so I just, you know, I just remember coming in, and, you know, we had some veteran guys, and obviously the Marty Murrays and Colin Couches, Dubinsky, he's Wade Redden going down the line. We had some good players and some good young players that were together for, you know, some of us 3 years, and it just we got a taste the year before, and you know, it's that old thing. Once you get a taste, you want more of it. So we were able to go to the Memorial Cup that first year, and we ended up losing in the semifinals in Kamloops. And then the next year, we wanted more of it, and we got on a run and, you know, in the playoffs there. And I remember beating Spokane, I believe it was, in five games, could have been. And there was about an 18 or so hour bus ride coming back. And when we came back, there was about 300-400 people to greet us at the old Keystone Center there. So it was just good memories, to be honest with you, all around. And, you know, good group of guys. And it was just a fun place to play. And, you know, that's where I won most of my fights and scored the majority of my goals. So I guess I wasted them all in Brandon. But it was a great place to play, a good group of guys. And, you know, like Kelly, you must commend Kelly McCrimmon for the job he's done year after year after year. And, yeah, I still watch. I keep tabs on. Obviously, I don't know the players as closely, but I still talk to my old Billich and, you know, talk to Kelly here and there. And I'm proud that I was a Wheat King. I'm proud of what they're doing. And if they can win, that'd be awesome.
Chris Dingman is a Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst and, of course, a former Brandon Wheat King. Chris, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure.
Take care, Chris.
My pleasure.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.